to another edition of View from the Bleachers Radio. It's good to have you back. I'm your host, Joe Aiello, and we've got a full crew today. I'm joined by Josh and Sean. All of us are here, and we're ready to go. Guys, how are you doing today?
Top of the morning.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Good use of Irish literacy.
Talking off the air. Sean, you are currently engaging in a frosty beverage, are you not?
It's possible. Rumors have it.
well, none of us get paid, so we don't have to risk losing our jobs here. So
that's true, yeah.
And then I had mentioned that I am not a beer drinker, so I am not currently involving myself in drinking a Guinness or anything like that, which may or may not be what Sean is partaking in. But hopefully you at home, if you're listening to this and it's still Monday, you're involved in that and enjoying a St. Patrick's Day that around here has been a little bit cold and wet and dreary.
Oh, so cold.
But hopefully in Arizona it has not been. And guys, let's get right into it. Before we get to the news, I want to remind our listeners that we do have a contest running. If you go to viewfromthebleachers.com and click on the latest episode of the podcast, you'll see in the show notes a link to enter the contest, and all you do is – it's very simple. When you click that link, it's going to take you to an automatically pre-populated Twitter tweet that you can tweet out to your followers, and by doing that, it'll alert us that you did it, and we'll go ahead and favorite that tweet. And when we get all done with the month, we're going to draw at random some of those favorite entries, and so that way you'll be entered to win one of two prizes. We've got a DVD about the Cubs and also a new book by George Will that we're going to be talking about. As well, and we're giving away 8 prizes, so there's still plenty of time for you to get involved and get entered into that contest, and that helps us as a podcast tremendously. You can also rate us and review us on iTunes. If you haven't done that, please take the time to do it. We've got quite a few ratings and quite a few reviews, but we always need more. We're still not quite where we want to be yet, and we would really appreciate your help in that area as well. Feel free to tweet us. I'm at VFTB. It stands for View from the Bleachers. You can tweet Josh at JC Stats and at Sean, at Powell underscore Sean. Sean spelled S-E-A-N. Guys, let's get right to it. We had another week in spring training baseball, my favorite, and I say that sarcastically. I'm more than willing to admit that I don't like spring training baseball, and I'm ready for the opening day to get here, but we still have some games to talk about, and so let's get right to it. We've kind of broken down our roster. Sean and I kind of talked a little bit more about the roster last week, but let's talk a little bit about some of the guys this week that were newsworthy, and let's start a little bit with Starlin Castro. Starlin Castro was quoted as kind of talking a little bit about how he was not quite ready. I think he was quoted as saying he was about 40%. And that worries me a little bit because of the fact that, you know, he hasn't seen much time in spring training this year, and we're getting close to opening day. What do you guys make of Starlin Castro?
Well, I think it's just going to – hopefully he gets back to it soon. I think this injury is worse than everyone thought it was originally, unfortunately. Unless he is just – the injury carries into the year and he's on the DL, I still think he's going to, you know, start the year at shortstop. But it's going to slow down his start to the year because he's going to still sort of be in spring training when the year starts. An option might be to put him in minor league camp in spring training, and you can do weird things like have him lead off every inning just to make up at bats. I'm not sure that's the same thing, really. But I mean, a year that he needs a bounce back, this is a really tough thing to get a slow start like this.
You have to wonder. He's had some really good camps and some really bad camps. Now, I know an injury is not necessarily the thing you want to have when you're coming off a very bad season, his worst as a pro, but maybe not having camp will allow him to not overthink the start to the season.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little bummed because of the fact that, and I know it's small sample size, but I mean, in 2 games, he had 2 at-bats. He had, you know, a single and a double in those at-bats. He was 2 for 2, basically. And it was, you know, the exact start that you wanted to see him do, and then see him go down with the injuries a little bit disappointing. But what I did, I posed on Twitter the other day, guys, what does this mean if for example, Starlin Castro needs to spend an extended period of spring training or, doing something like that with the club? What does this do to the roster? Does this mean that Javier Baez could be potentially on the roster for opening day, or what will it take to do that?
I still say there's absolutely zero chance Baez starts the year on the major league roster. Two reasons are the service time issue. Not to go into it in too much detail, but if a player gets 172 service days, that counts as a full year, and that would take a year off of his time before he's a free agent. So he'd be a free agent after 2019 rather than 2020. And then there's the Super 2 issue, and that deadline is in July. So I think at the very, very earliest we'd ever see Baez under any circumstance would be late April for the service time considerations, and probably more likely sometime in July to also take care of the Super 2 considerations. So I don't think there's any way. Darwin Barney's been playing short quite a bit, so I think if Castro's on the bench or on the DL to start the year, you see Barney at short and maybe Bonifacio or Balbuena, who can both cover second, covers second until Castro's back. So I think we have enough of the infielders to be able to cover it without much issue.
I mean, it's not a great infield defensively with him in the lineup. I mean, it won't really be that much worse without him, and the only thing they're going to miss him is on the offensive end. But I think 80% is probably – I always find these percentages of how far I am close to being fully healthy is so arbitrary, because how do you measure how truly healthy you are? Is it strength? Is it how it feels? I think he'll be ready for opening day, but it might not be pretty for the first 2 weeks.
You know, Sean, I want to ask you a question. I want to counter or kind of combat what you were just saying, and I want to give you four names, and I want you to tell me what these four names have in common and why I think that what your argument is might not be valid. Starlin Castro, Anthony Rizzo, Evan Longoria, and I forgot the fourth name.
Trout?
No, not Mike Trout. That was where I thought you were going to think I was going. But no, Evan Longoria. You know, Starlin Castro, Anthony Rizzo. Where would I be going with those names?
Are you saying they get big contract extensions before they hit free agency anyway?
Exactly. And so yeah. I think that nowadays it's kind of the trend to lock up these young players, and I think we'll see it with Mike Trout over the next year or so. You know, these guys aren't even getting to the point where they're hitting free agency or even getting to arbitration. And so I don't stress over that, because if Baez is a guy that's gonna do the offensive production like we think he's going to, then you can most definitely bet that they're gonna try to take advantage of that and lock him into a long term deal well before arbitration even hits.
Well, that's true, but Epstein has said that they have a club policy for including at least one free agent year in the contract and another free agent year via club option. So it's still at the Cubs' advantage to have him with more free agent years remaining when they do sign him. I mean, maybe not of a big of a point at that stage, but it still would be to the Cubs' advantage. And this year, I mean, what are you gaining, really? And he hasn't played one at-bat in AAA. We got to remember that. He just did AA last year. So I think they want to get him at least some at-bats in AAA. It's not like he doesn't have flaws in the game that he can't work on, because he's, the other day he had an 0-for-4, had some nasty strikeouts, looked pretty rough. So, you know, I think there's more disadvantages than advantages to bringing up right now on opening day.
And I agree. Oh. I agree 100%. If we look at Baez's numbers, and I don't think this is including today. You know, he's hitting .276. His on base percentage is also .276. So he hasn't drawn a single walk this spring training yet. The strikeouts haven't been a horrible problem. They're not good, 8 strikeouts. But you can't help but see 3 home runs, leading the team in home runs, and just those home runs being completely obliterated. I think you're right, but I don't know that I would use service time as the reason. I think it would be more he's not ready yet. He needs more seasoning.
We've seen in recent years a few bad teams bring up guys right at the start of the year that missed AAA the year before. They ended up in AA. Mm-hmm. I forgot who the Twins pulled up last year. their center fielder, I can't remember his name. But he was in New Britain to end the year in 2012 and then started with the club in April in 2013.
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, because we know we're pretty much going to see Baez this year. It's just a matter of when. But I don't know. I think that we've got to just be patient, but at some time you have to, if he's mashing, you got to start giving serious consideration, because we say up and down that, well, what's the point in bringing him up this year? Well, shoot, what if everybody's ready this year and this is the year that we can actually begin to become competitive? Maybe not World Series competitive, but at least making some sort of a run, you might as well, because you never know when guys are going to get hurt. I mean, we saw the Braves lose Chris Medlin for the year. You never know when guys could have something happen. So let's turn our attention then to the infield. We've seen Baez. Another prospect that's making a name for himself this year is Mike Olt. And he's also leading the team in home runs with three. And two of those came in one game the other day. Guys, Josh, what do you think about Olt? Is he the leader in the clubhouse now for the starting third base job?
I think just based on what – I mean, they traded for him in the whole Garza thing. He was really the big piece of that, at least from my point of view, he was the big piece in that trade. And if he's ready to have the job and all his issues with his eyes and other ailing issues that were plaguing him at the beginning of the spring – are really gone, then he should be the guy. Based on talent alone, he should be the guy. And based on wanting to take that next step with the young guys with this franchise, then yeah, I've been on the old train since we acquired him last July. But it's just a matter of him actually putting it together in the regular season.
I didn't realize there was an old train. I would have bought tickets long ago.
Oh, ride the old train.
Yeah, I'm an old believer as well. Sean, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's there. It's his for the taking. But you know, he was rested today. Wasn't in the lineup. Still trying to rest that shoulder, and he's yet to play one single game at third. That's the only thing that concerns you. I mean, at some point, he's got to start taking reps at third and showing that his shoulder tiredness or soreness, whatever it is past him, and he can make those throws and be your guy. So, I say, yeah, he's the dude, but. I'll feel a lot better about that when I see him actually at the hot corner making some starts there.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think that the competition for Olt is so weak in terms of guys that he's competing with that if he can do anything, I think he'll be given the benefit of the doubt.
And I think the fact, like the whole Starlin injury kind of changes Olt's positioning with the team, even if he's not lighting it up in the last 2 weeks of spring training. If they're seriously considering Donnie Murphy or Bonifacio or Val Bullion at second base, that helps them secure the spot at third.
Right.
That's
right.
True.
It opens up another infield spot, basically, is what it does. Moving on onto the mound here, guys, I want to talk to you a little bit about one of the guys that I really like, and that's Aroldis Vizcaíno. We've kind of gone back and forth on him, but everything we hear out of camp is that he's, you know, pitching to live batters and still hitting 98 on the gun. I'm one of the ones that believes that he'll make this opening day roster. Are you starting to come around to my way of thinking at all yet?
I'm not, no. I love the guy, but I still think they ease him into it, keep him in warm weather, use him when they want to use him, not when they need to use him, and just make sure, double check under the hood, you know, make sure he's good to go. Again, this year, no reason to rush him up into the cold weather, put him under pressure. Just give him a little more time to just be solid. And, you know, if we had to use him today, he looks like he's good to go. But I don't think we have to. And that's the only reason I think he stays down.
Yeah, I think he's a May-June call-up, too.
You guys,
that's a pretty safe assumption.
You guys will come around. You'll come around. Just wait until he hits 100 on the gun tomorrow, and you'll see. You'll see.
All right.
He's coming. So looking at the roster here, the only other spot that really kind of is up in the air is fifth outfield spot and fifth starter. Let's start with the fifth starter spot. We saw Kyle Hendricks have a really good start this past week, but then obviously he was sent down. So he's not a guy that's in the mix here for the fifth starting spot. Chris Rusin had an outing the other day. If you guys had to pick right now on the record, assuming that Jake Arrieta is not going to be ready for major league camp, as of opening day, who's our fifth starter?
Arrieta was going to be my pick. I think he was my pick a couple of weeks ago, but I mean that's kind of out the window now. But I would say that Rusin is probably the safest option right now. If I had to choose with 2 weeks to go, he's had a couple of pretty good outings. I think he only gave up one or two runs against the Mets. In four or five innings of work.
Yeah, he didn't pitch horribly.
So, we're talking about a team that's going to really struggle this year. It's going to be probably in the bottom five, six teams in the league, and we're kind of talking about a fifth starter. Your options aren't going to be great, and so Rusin probably the safest bet to start the year.
Yeah, I'm pulling up Rusin's last start. He started yesterday and went four innings, gave up one hit, struck out two, walked none, no earned runs.
Oh, so no runs, okay.
Yeah, no runs. And then the outing before that did not get the start, but went three innings, no hits, and no strikeouts, no walks either. So basically just a perfect, basically a perfect three innings there. It says that he only pitched nine pitches in three innings. That can't be right.
No, there's no way.
I mean, but it says nine pitches, three innings, which essentially would be one pitch at bats, all three at bats.
Now that is efficiency there.
That can't be right.
Where are you getting this from?
I'm looking right on Cubs.com under his game log, and it says March 10th against San Francisco, nine pitches, three innings of work.
I want to see somebody throw a 27-pitch completion.
Now, I know the minor leagues, their pitch counts are not accurate when you look at their website. And I'm pulling up the box score here to see if it matches. And it does not list pitches in the box score. So I have to imagine that that's not correct.
I don't even think – when I worked at ESPN doing spring training stuff, I don't even think we kept pitch counts.
Yeah, I have to. Games. Because it doesn't come into play. So I have to imagine that that's not correct. But if it is, my goodness, what that's some crazy efficiency.
Mark him down.
That's right. I tend to go a different way. I think, you know, I want to say Chris Rusin, but part of me kind of wants to say Villanueva as well. Even though he hasn't gotten any starts spring training, I think he would be a better candidate for it. We know one of the guys that's not going to get the job is James McDonald, who basically has not only crapped the bed but also hurt himself. So he's pretty much out of the mix. I saw an article the other day that I don't even know how to pronounce his first name. Wada is in the mix for the fifth starting position, but I don't see him getting the
He got spot. Drilled the other day.
Yeah, I don't think he could possibly be the answer. I think it'll probably be Rusin, but I would rather see Villanueva, I think. Fifth outfield spot. I know Sean, your boyfriend is in the mix here. Ryan Kalish.
I'm blushing.
I know. What is it about Kalish that you see? Because I'm not seeing it. Help me.
It's not what I see. It's what the reports out of camp are that all the coaches love him. He's looking great. He's getting him tons of opportunities in center and with batting first or second in the lineup. So he's getting all the opportunity. He's getting rave reviews. As we know, he was a top prospect in the Red Sox system, selected by Theo Epstein and Jason McLeod, scouted by those guys, selected, and he was in their 40-man roster, but he had neck injury. He dove for a ball, and he actually had the neck injury repaired by the same guy who did Peyton Manning's surgery. And so just with the Red Sox being an ultra-competitive team with the great players, they just couldn't afford to keep him, and that's why the Cubs were able to snatch him up. But I think this front office believes in him and saw what he was pre-injury, and maybe he's returning to form and be a good steal for the guys. So I think it just all indications are that he's the guy that is winning favor with everyone right now. And if it's between him and Darnell McDonald, I mean, what's the upside of Darnell? He's like 35 or 36 years old. So I think Kalish sounds like the guy to me.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that my boyfriend Josh Vitters is probably not going to get the spot. He's hitting 133. But on the positive side, he's got an on-base percentage of .316. I mean, that's almost 200 points higher than his batting average. So Josh Vitters is doing some work at the plate in terms of being patient, and hopefully that'll translate with some hits. But, boy, I was really hoping he would do more. He just has.
You know, I could stand up there and just never swing or hit anything. I could do that, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. Maybe you're right with Kalish, but I'm not feeling it. I'm not excited about it one bit. To me, it reminds me of a guy. What was the guy that we had last year that was just a fourth or fifth outfielder? Didn't look like he could crush the ball just based on how big he was. What the heck's the guy's name last year? Outfielder. Help me out.
Joe Mather?
Yes. Just looked like he could crush the ball based on how big he was.
St. Louis, yeah.
And he didn't do anything.
But he kind of came out of nowhere, and that was just like.
And he was older.
But Kalish has a history of being a top prospect guy. So.
I guess. I looked at him and I kept seeing – all I kept seeing was like Jason Wirth. And I just was like, oh, this guy's going to be awesome. And then and then nothing bad, just bad.
Kalish was a top 10 prospect in the Red Sox system.
Yeah.
According to Baseball
America. Well, I mean, Joe Mather was drafted in the third round of the draft. And by the Cardinals, no less, who are notorious for developing good talent. So, you know, they must have saw something, and he was just bad. I don't even is he even in baseball anymore?
He's somewhere.
I don't know.
I remember seeing his name last year somewhere.
I mean, he didn't play last year for the Cubs, so I don't know where he played. I'm looking here on his baseball reference page, and he was with the Reds organization last year and actually spent some time with the Independent League. So he wasn't even with the Reds the whole year.
You know, he actually played against the Cubs, I think, one game last year, because I remember turning on a game and be like, oh, Joe Mather's in the lineup.
No, he didn't play at all in the majors last year.
Okay.
No major league time last year. 2012, he played with the Cubs. He got 103 games. I don't know how in the world that's possible. But
that was Jeff Baker. Never mind.
They're nowhere near the same. Only last bit of roster nuggets that I saw was, and I don't know if you guys caught this, but Marcus Mateo was returned to the Cubs after being selected in the Rule 5 draft by the Diamondbacks. So apparently he was not Diamondback worthy, and he's been returned to the Cubs. I don't know what this means for Mateo. I know he's not on the 40-man roster. But do you see him getting any chance to make a name for himself in the bullpen, given the fact that he does have major league experience this year, Josh?
I think given the fact that, again, this is the Cubs, I think anyone has a chance to prove themselves. But I don't know. I liked him okay when he was pitching, but I don't know. If the Diamondbacks, who have some need for relievers, I mean, they have pretty good starting pitching, but they have a need for middle relief and back end of relief. And if he's not good enough to even make their minor league camp, well, he has to make their major league roster, I guess, since he was Rule 5. But at this stage in the game, they're kind of focusing on their 15, 16 guys that they can whittle down right before the start of the season. I don't think he's going to be on that list.
And I think it's safe to say that if he is going to make an impact, it won't be a major impact. I think we've got plenty of power arms in that bullpen now that it'll be tough for him to crack and less of an injury. So I think it's safe to say, guys, and I don't know if you agree, but I don't think we're quite ready to anoint anybody as a lock for this major league team that we haven't already put in there. And so I think we probably are going to need to wait again until next week before we start to get a clearer picture on who those last spots are going to go to. So why don't we move on a little bit to the next item on the agenda, which is the mailbag. We've got one mailbag question this week, and this comes from our friend Chris in North Carolina, who coincidentally just joined our fantasy league. And so I know, Josh, you're not a part of that, but Sean is anxiously awaiting his butt kicking, and we should have a good time. But Chris writes in and says, if Samardzic is traded at the deadline this year, what positions do you think the front office will go after, and what caliber prospects do you think the Cubs could get, assuming the Shark is having a better year than last? If I had to answer this question quickly, I would say starting pitcher, starting pitcher, starting pitcher, starting pitcher. Yeah, am I wrong on that?
No, they're definitely going to have to ask for arms back. When you look for the caliber of pitcher, I always think about this trade and compare it to Matt Garza's trade last year. Mm-hmm. So if you look at how good, by the way, does this trade look now? Think about this. The Rangers got 13 games of Matt Garza. That's it. 13 right. games. He lost. He went 4-5. And here's who we got. CJ Edwards, minor league pitcher of the year last year in all of baseball, and who a lot of people see as a number two starter. Justin Grimm, power arm out of the bullpen. Neil Ramirez, another power arm out of the bullpen. Both these guys have chances to make the team. And then Mike Olt, who could be our starting third baseman, all for 13 games of Garza. That trade is amazing.
Half of which how were lost.
How good does that look? I mean, it's unbelievable.
It reminds me a little bit about the. It reminds me a little of the Aramis Ramirez trade.
Yeah.
Where you just fleece the other people.
Yeah, I agree. And so I'm thinking though, the difference in these two pitchers is that Garza was 13 games, free agent. Shark has another year left after this one. So he should be even more valuable than Garza was, just because as much time as the team trading for him is going to get. So, you know, you can't imagine every trade's going to be this good. I mean, these all guys are all still kind of minor league players, but the centerpiece of the deal has to be an almost major league ready starting pitching prospect on the lines of an Archie Bradley or Marcus Stroman, somebody like that, that you project to be a number one, number two, top of the rotation type guy. Plus, you know, maybe a high ceiling arm and maybe a high ceiling athletic position player as well, like at minimum.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how these guys develop, and I actually am curious to see whether or not Texas will trade with us anymore after the Ryan Dempster trade, and the Giovanni Soto trade, you know, the Matt Garza trade. It's almost to where they would start to say buyer beware a little bit here, because they've not gotten good products out of the Cubs as a result. And so I think we need to be on the phone with Texas right around May about Jason Hamill and Nate Shearholz and see if we can't maybe peddle those guys as well.
I don't think they have anybody left in their minor league system to trade us.
Oh, there's got to be somebody. There's got to be somebody.
Well, they definitely have some minor leaguers, but they've certainly been weakened. I mean, we ripped – I mean, everybody on Twitter a week ago was saying how did the Rangers trade C.J. Edwards? And he was one of four guys that we got back, you know?
For a first-round exit in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Ugh.
It is what it is. I mean, we'll reap the benefits of it. But, Chris, thanks for the question. We appreciate it, guys. You can always tweet us questions at VFTB or to the other guys, or email them to viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. We'd love to have them. We need more of them. And, again, don't necessarily make them baseball-related. Who cares about baseball? The whole podcast is about baseball. Feel free to get some nonsense in there, guys. We don't care. We don't mind. Throw some nonsense questions in there. We'll be glad to answer them as well. Have some fun with it. Moving on, guys, we have a feature that we just started two podcasts ago, and last week Sean and I had to carry the load, and it was not our strength. But last week we talked about the home run in the JC stat of the week. This week, Josh is back, mercifully, and so he's going to address a new stat. And Josh, why don't you take it away?
All right. 2 weeks ago, we talked about WAR, and that was kind of an animal to take on the first week of the segment. But today, we're going to go a little bit easier to the always hated BABIP. Do you guys know what BABIP stands for?
I do, but why don't you tell us anyways?
All right. It's batting average on balls in play. And basically what that means is you take all hits, and you take away – well, strikeouts aren't hits, but you take away home runs. So it's – the actual equation comes out to be home run hits minus home runs divided by at-bats minus strikeouts minus home runs, and you get BABIP. So it's every single ball that falls or is caught inside of the lines and to the wall. Pretty self-explanatory. Inside the baseball diamond. Now, according to everyone that has come up with BABIP, and that was come up by some guy named Voros McCracken, what a great name that was, about 70% of balls put in play inside the park are recorded for outs. So the average for both pitchers and batters is 300. About on an average day in an average park, 30% of balls put in play will fall for a hit. Now there's a really funny video that's out there, and it's called BABIP, the Luck Dragon. Basically, it's this guy that takes two stats, left on base percentage and BABIP, and calls them the luckiest stats in baseball. Now there's a lot of truth to that, because a pitcher has a lot of control over whether he leaves a ball over the plate and it gets hit out of the park. He has a lot of control over a strikeout or a walk in terms of placement and fooling the batter into thinking a ball is going to be somewhere where it's not. But what he doesn't have control over is if a player makes contact and it's not out of the park contact, he doesn't necessarily know where it's going. And he doesn't necessarily know if the defense is going to be in the greatest position to record the out. Which is why BABIP is considered not a meaningless stat, because it has its value, but a lucky stat. luck isn't the only thing that goes into this, although a lot of people, I've seen a lot of complaints on the blog over the years that DAPUP is stupid because it's calculating luck. But that's not necessarily true, because players that have, or batters that have high BABIP, like I think Ichiro is like a 374 BABIP player during his entire career, which is insane. But and obviously his average kind of went along with that. But most players will fall between the 280 and 320 range. Now, a player that has a really bad year and has a really bad BABIP, say they're maybe 220, are they necessarily just unlucky? I mean, maybe as Cubs fans, we see a lot of guys that hit really nice balls up the middle, and the second baseman makes a crazy play on it, or there's really good contact, and it goes directly to the guy at short. That stuff happens, and it is kind of included in BABIP. But there's also defense, and according to Fangraphs, they plug in the changes in talent level. Now, what the changes in talent level is a pitcher might start the season with a really good team, and it kind of moves into defense too. But by the end of the year, there's injuries on defense, well, injuries to the lineup, and the same defense that you had to start the year isn't the same, and so your BABIP is moving up and down accordingly. Also, the same thing, if somebody comes in from the minor leagues and is an amazing defender that is an upgrade over your starter from the beginning of the year, then your BABIP, again, goes up and down. But basically, BABIP is a determinant of some luck. Does that make any sense?
It does, and I've got some questions to clarify for some things that I've wondered on it. So, obviously, BABIP is going to be higher for a player that tends to hit higher average. So, you mentioned Ichiro. So, you know, I would reason then to say that the more at bats that a player sees over the course of his career, where we can get a better picture of what his BABIP on average looks like, the more accurate we can actually use that to see whether or not he's been the product of just poor luck or too much luck would be my guess. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I think BABIP is a really good projection tool, because if you watch every single game, 162 games, you just watch a player's at-bats on loop, of course there's going to be instances of luck mm-hmm. or bad luck. It happens to every player, and so that's not the only determinant into the balls they're putting in play and what's happening to them when they're putting them into play. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for a pitcher. A pitcher could have, especially ground ball pitchers, they normally have better BABIPs because, well, they're getting more outs. Now, I mean, there's a ton of just different factors, and that's why a lot of people don't like it, because what if the ballpark's bigger? You're not changing BABIP for a guy that's playing in a pitcher's park compared to a hitter's park, and you're not talking about a guy that plays in a dome comparison to someone that has to deal with the sunshine in the outfield. I understand that, but at the same time, it's a good projection tool because, yeah, maybe this guy had a really bad year, but if you go back and watch his tape, it was just bad luck. I think in that video, they actually brought up Mike Messina, who in 2005 had a really bad BABIP and a really bad ERA, but a lot of it had to do with defense and guys just not hitting the holes well. And right. then that next year, much better BABIP, much better ERA, and the team had a much better season in terms of wins.
And I think the key, and I think what we really need to get across to anybody as they're using these stats, I'm actually reading a book now for those people that are interested in it, and I wish I would. I think it's Beyond the Box Score, I think is the name of the book. It's really just an intro primer to advanced stats. And I think the key to get across to people is very simple. There's no stat that by itself is going to tell you everything about a player. Every stat is a measurement of something. And so to just look at BABIP and say, well, this player was unlucky, I think would be irresponsible. And so you need, if you look at BABIP and say, wow, his BABIP was really low, okay, well, that tells me where I need to maybe go with that. Maybe I need to look at this stat. Maybe I need to look at his line drive percentage or you know, his different things like that to show you, let's investigate further what might be the cause. It's no different. I liken it to this. If you go to the doctor and you say, my stomach hurts, does that mean that you have, you know, appendicitis? No, not necessarily. It might. And so they're going to ask you more questions. They're going to do some more investigating along different avenues to try to properly diagnose what's going on. Same thing with stats. If you look and you say, boy, this guy's just crushing it in on-base percentage, he must be the best player in the world. Well, no, not necessarily. We need to look at some other stats to really properly evaluate him.
The player that comes into mind in terms of – and a lot of this has to do with hot starts and slumps. I mean, that directly affects BABIP. But Sam Fold, right after he got traded to the Rays, had that crazy April where he was just – he was hitting everything out of the park. He was getting triples. He was getting inside the park home runs. The guy was just going nuts. And his BABIP was like top five in the league for the month of April. And then we never heard from him again.
Right.
And he was still in the lineup, but a lot of it is luck. But at the same time, like you said, it's irresponsible to assume that all of it has to do with luck because there are so many other factors that go into a baseball game that are out of everyone's control. You can't control the wind. You can't control the sun. You can't control the weather if it's drizzling. You can't control if a guy tweaks his hamstring while going out for a routine fly ball and falls over and it's a triple. It's just little things are hard to control, and there's hard to provide a stat for every single thing that happens in a game.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's the key. And I think that hopefully that's what we'll accomplish with this series of Stat of the Week, is just an intro to the different stats and how they're used and maybe how we might be talking about them, so that way you're not in the dark on that. Josh, thanks for that. We appreciate it. Guys, before we get to our final segment, which is the game of the show, and this is a new game that we're going to debut. We were going to debut it last week, but because Josh was out, we waited. I was just perusing baseball references. Sometimes I like to do when I like to dork out. And while you were talking, Josh, I Googled Ichiro, and all I did was type in Ichiro in my little search bar. And did you know that there was the ultimate Japanese player that played in the major leagues, actually from 1955 to 1956, Ichiro Tanaka?
No.
The combination of both hitting and pitching.
Get slap singles and strike out 10 a game.
Yep, you got it, man. And actually, I don't think he played in the major leagues now that I'm looking at it. I think he just – apparently Baseball Reference now has Japanese league stats. So apparently he was just playing in the Japanese league and not doing it very well. So apparently you can't do both. But, Ichiro Tanaka I thought would be the perfect hybrid of the two and maybe come over and make lots of waves. But apparently not. He's 81 now. Still alive, though. So that brings us to our last stat as we completely fall off the wagon here. And this is a new segment that I want to call Fast Five. It has nothing to do with the movie. Basically just a way for us to just throw some rapid fire questions at you two. I'm spared because I'm the host. And so we're going to throw some rapid fire questions designed for, maybe a sentence or so, answer. Just really quick rapid fire, very similar to what they do on Intentional Talk on MLB Network, where they're just basically rapid-fire questions to the guest. And so some of these are going to be baseball-related, some are not, but they're designed to just throw them at you off the cuff to not let you put a lot of thought into them, because that's the way we roll here. So, Josh, we'll start with you, and we'll just get Josh's answers first, and then that'll give Sean a little bit of time to think over his. So, Josh, first question for you, best baseball memory?
My last at-bat ever was a home run.
Good. Favorite player now?
Andrew McCutchen.
Okay. Favorite player then, when you were growing up or, long ago? Well, who was your favorite player then?
Tino Martinez.
Interesting. If you could go on a man date with anybody in sports right now, who would it be?
Roger Federer.
And your favorite holiday that's a non-traditional holiday, and we say this one in honor of St. Patrick's Day, which is not really a major holiday like a Thanksgiving or Christmas. What's your favorite non-traditional holiday or non-major holiday?
Can I say Labor Day?
Yeah, Labor Day is good. I think it works. I think by non-major we're looking at, not Christmas, not Thanksgiving, not Easter. Those probably are the big three, not 4th of July. Good, good deal. Sean, we're going to move on to you. Best baseball memory.
The first batter I faced in Little League, I struck out.
Okay, good. Favorite player now?
Javier Baez.
Interesting. Favorite play? How many times have you seen Javier Baez at bats?
Enough. Enough times.
Favorite player?
My favorite major league player is Rizzo, though.
Okay. Favorite player then?
Jody Davis was my first favorite player ever.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I was a catcher like in T-ball or coach's pitch, and he was the Cubs catcher, and he was my guy.
If you could go on a mandate with anybody right now in sports, who would it be?
Maybe Jeter, if he could bring his date.
Now, you know the story about Jeter is if you go to Jeter's house, you have to put your cell phone in a basket.
So gift bags, so that would be cool too.
Well, no, he wants you to put, and this is no joke, they talked about it on Mike and Mike about a month ago. If you go to Jeter's house, he has a basket at the front door. You have to put your cell phone in the basket so that he has no cell phone pictures, anything like that.
Right, and that's smart, but all the girls he dates, like when he's ready to move on, he like sends them like this awesome gift basket like they get at the Oscars. He does that really too.
Jeter's the man. He stays out of trouble, and he gets ladies.
Yeah, and he sends a card with it. Thanks for playing.
And his current girlfriend is the DirecTV genie, so he's doing all right.
And last one, favorite holiday that's a non-major holiday.
Would Halloween count as non-major?
Yeah, I think so.
Because, yeah, I like Halloween a lot.
Okay. And I feel bad if I don't answer my own question, so I'm going to just give him some answers here. Best baseball memory for me, definitely being at Game 1 of the NLDS in 2003, I guess it was. Yeah, 2003 in Atlanta, Kerry Wood pitched a tremendous game, and I was there in the bleachers. Favorite player now is, as weird as it sounds, I'm going to go Travis Wood. Favorite player, actually, no, I take that back, Josh Hamilton. I like Josh Hamilton a lot. Favorite player then, this one you're going to make fun of me a little bit, but I had two. One was Kirby Puckett. He was one of my baseball heroes when I was growing up. And the other one was Ray Sanchez at shortstop. I thought he was the greatest shortstop in the history of the game. If I could go on a mandate with anybody in sports right now, I think it would probably have to be Peyton Manning. I think he's just got a tremendous personality, and I think he would be a lot of fun to hang out with. Favorite non-major holiday for me, I was actually going to go Halloween as well. I think it's pretty cool to answer the door and see the kids' costumes. I never got to do that as a kid. We never had any trick-or-treaters, so I enjoy doing that now. And so I think that's pretty cool. So that was Fast Five, guys. What do you think?
Fast.
Quick and dirty. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the show. We're going to be back next Monday. Again, remember, you need to tweet and tweet and tweet about the show. We need your help. We need you to be able to enter the contest by going to viewfromthebleachers.com and clicking on the show notes, clicking the link that says enter the contest, and you will be good to go. There'll also be some notes in the post. We'll have a link to the video that Josh was mentioning in the stat of the week, the BatBip, the crazy purple dragon or whatever it was. We'll get that in there, and we'll also have some show notes in there in terms of what we talked about today. Please take some time to read those. Watch the video. We enjoy it. Make sure you send us some nonsense mailbag questions. We need those. We want to get involved with you there. And for Josh and Sean, I'm Joe. That's going to do it for another edition of View from the Bleachers Radio. We'll see you next week.